everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is the Red, White, and Rude, where I, the conservative Latino, am here to break down culture and how politics intercede with it. As Andrew Breitbart once said, and is now legendary, politics is downstream of culture. And what does that mean? It means everything that happens in this country culturally, whether it's movies, music, sports, etc. It does affect us politically, if not sooner than later. And that's why I have this podcast. I'm here to break it down for you, to talk to you about it, so you stay informed and you're well armed as we continue this battle against the authoritarianism that the elites want to impose on us. And tonight, we've got a great show. We are going to talk how streaming has surpassed network television. We're going to talk Karate Kid Legends and the fact that Hollywood missed the mark and did not give us what we wanted. And we're looking at the quick money grab and just got it wrong and how that tends to be the case in Hollywood. What has happened to Hollywood? And then we are going to close it out with another woke gaming controversy that proves you go woke, you go broke. Or apologizing to the masses who don't actually pay and support you is not going to help your product now that we conservatives have learned how to boycott. Before we do that, though, let me do my due diligence here and tell you to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. Grumblingsmedia.com. You'll find this podcast there. You'll find my legendary Fired Up podcast. where I talk national politics, and there's Fired Up California, where I talk about all things California, because as the Golden State, which we used to be, we're not golden anymore, where we become a bleep hole, and I live here, SoCal, and I can say that because it's true, but California still believes how they go, the nation goes, and a lot of Democrats do keep their eyes on us. You have no clue how much the Democrats have taken from California and tried to get it past committees to try to bring it to the floor to implement it nationally. So you'll find that podcast there. You'll find our libertarian podcast there, as well as my Points on the Board podcast, where I like this culture podcast. I do that with sports. And you'll find our Pure Play Sports, meaning all it is a sports show. And we've got basketball and football. We are expanding and growing. Hey, and as always, we're looking for volunteers. We are an all-volunteer group. So with that, let's get right into it. First topic at hand is streaming triumph, how Netflix, YouTube, and company, i.e. streaming, are redefining television in 2022. So, Nielsen in May, their May 2025 report, it showed that streaming services outpaced broadcast and cable TV. I mean, the viewership was 44.8% for streaming, combined 44.2% for everything else, cable and network. You know, so obviously streaming is the biggest two, I would assume they're the biggest two, and with Netflix being the largest with over 300 million live viewers or subscribers worldwide, and then you have Amazon, and then you have YouTube, and then you have various other ones that are coming on board, and most of them are struggling. You know, Disney Plus is successful, but it's struggling. Then you have Paramount, Peacock, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to talk about all of them. So how are networks like ABC, NBC, and CBS, how are they adapting? Well, they're doing their own streaming. So what is the effectiveness of this? What is the future of linear TV? And what are the implications for Hollywood, the consumer costs, content production, and the industry trends? As I say in my Fired Up podcast, which is conservative politics, live streams every Friday at 7 p.m. God, I should have been a used car salesman, huh? But as I like to say there, I bring receipts. So I bring the data here to show you what it means and break that down. So what are some of the key points from the Nielsen report? So, again, streaming captured about 44.8% of TV viewership last May. And that surpassed broadcast, which was 20.1%, and cable, 24.1%. Broadcast, network broadcasting being ABC, CBS, NBC, and cable being the rest, the other 300 channels you pay for. And they had a combined 44.2%. Now, that is huge. We predicted it, not me in general, but everybody saw this coming. So streaming has seen a 71% growth since May of 2021. And that's from 26% to 71%. And broadcast and cable declined 21%. and 39%. So broadcast declined 21%, cable 39%. Now, let me forewarn you, though. I'm not forewarning you. Let me just give you a heads up. Everybody on cable is streaming. You can get A&E Plus. You can get Fox through there. You can get everything on streaming services. So while they may be dying, they're not dumb, and they are looking to the future. How successful they will be is the question. But YouTube led with a 12.5% of TV viewing share. Netflix was the top paid streaming service. YouTube makes sense. I'm on YouTube every day. When my wife comes home, she doesn't turn on network television. She watches YouTube podcasts. When I finish up my work day, I come in. I go, hey, what are we going to watch? You know, then she goes from that and we stream. We have Hulu, so we're streaming as well. But we're watching network shows that are streaming and cable shows that are streaming. So the free ad-supported streaming, which is called FAST. I had to look that up. I'm like, what's FAST, AI? And I'm like, duh, free ad-supported streaming. That's Roku Channel. That's Tubi. That's Pluto TV. And that held at about 6%. 5.7% of TV usage, and that's outpacing individual broadcast networks. So what that means is I'm not watching Saturday morning the station out of Chicago or the local KUSI here in San Diego. That I'm watching Tubi. I do watch Tubi. I do watch Roku. I do watch Pluto TV. And the only time I don't watch Hulu or any of these FAST platforms is when I start noticing some of these shows have 3-4 minutes. The popular shows are streaming channels. They have 4-minute commercials. I'm like, screw you, because it's like 4 minutes every time they break. So they're going to have to figure that out, because there's a lot of unsubscribing going on. People will subscribe for a while. This is too expensive, and they're giving me 4 minutes of commercials. I may as well stick to the network. So they have that issue to deal with. Netflix does it smartly. They'll have a 15, 30-second. I think they have like 40-second at times, but that's about it. So they're quick, short. Netflix gets it. Now, those hardcore leftists over there, they do get it. You know, Netflix, speaking of Netflix, their viewership rose 27% since 2021. That's a record 4 billion minutes on Christmas Day 2024 when they streamed the NFL games. Now, politically, they're eventually going to have a battle on their hands, because as the NFL goes towards more of these paying platforms, the government gives them a monopoly on how they do business. But we always got it for free, everything. Now they're switching to pay. Now there's going to be a smart politician like me one day who's going to go, no, 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 no. You don't get everything for free now, because they're getting a $100 million contract to stream 2 games on Peacock last year. And we foot the bill for the insurance for Super Bowl. They're going, no, we can't afford it. Well, yeah, you're going to figure out a way to afford it if I have my way once I get elected. So Netflix show you, quote, you, unquote, 5 seasons, 50 episodes, was the most streamed program with 4 billion minutes. That's how streaming does it. They use minutes. You know, how many shows were streamed in minutes. They don't give you the person count. So what are some of the demographic shifts? Older viewers, they watch 1/3 of all TV. They boosted streaming. Never saw that coming. Little tidbit. The CW, which they say is built for the youngsters, that was really watched by the oldsters when the survey came out last year. You know, old people, we just love good entertainment. We'd watch Walker. I'd laugh at Walker before they canceled it, but I'd laugh at Blue Bloods. But eventually you get invested in these shows and the characters, as silly as it sounds. But over 65 watch 1/3 of television. And by television, that's streaming, network, cable. Especially the free platforms like Tubi and Roku. And they favor classic shows like Gunsmoke. Look, I'm on Prime, and we watched the old Bob Newhart show from 1973. Right now, I am binging Three's Company from the 70s. I've watched Frasier. I got through with Cheers. I'm tired, you know, and God bless him, because he's right. I am missing out on some good quality American television, but I'm sick and tired of a 90-pound woman beating up a 300-pound man and doing it with ease as if it's the norm. That's just not realistic. And what's worse is that gives these people, these women, that emboldens them. I saw this in the military, sad to say, but true. You know, these little women trying to pick on their husband, sailor. You know how many fights I broke up? Too many to count. Whoa, bro, you can't knock your woman out. What are you doing? Because I'll be drunk and all, and these women be wanting to scratch eyes out, and a drunk husband be, no, sir, pow. So when I see shows like that, I'm like, no, you can't have that nonsense. But they do. So that just, it's a turnoff to me. You know, maybe it's part of my Latino bring, but it's a turnoff. So I don't watch many new shows. And the shows that I do watch that I appreciate with Netflix and others, I get to stream a lot of foreign shows. I watch Norwegian shows, Asian shows from India, from China, from Japan, Korea. They know how to make some great movies and shows. So there are demographic shifts, but us Osters are still a key demographic, even though they want to write us off. You know. So also what's happening now, you're going to have media companies are simulcasting major events. The Super Bowl was on Fox and they put it on Tubi at 4K, if I'm correct. The 2024 Olympics on NBC and Peacock. So it bridges linear and streaming audiences. See, it's all becoming a hybrid. ABC, NBC, and CBS, they rely on local news to retain older viewers. I don't watch local news much. You know, I don't watch network news at all. You know, but there's still an old farts segment that is too stupid to realize you shouldn't be watching it that do. But they're dying off. So regardless, that does make them have cultural relevance. But at the end of the day, you're talking 5, 6, 7 million. And those are the big shows. And it's a diminishing audience. Every cycle, it gets less and less. Nielsen's The Gauge report launched in 2021 tracks all these viewing trends, if you're wondering where my data is coming from. So why is streaming overtaking traditional television? Well, consumer behavior and technology. Streaming offers on-demand convenience. You can watch it when you want to watch it. It allows viewers to watch it at their pleasure. And TV's network television, cable television's linear, rigid schedule does not allow that. And it's true. I mean, I got to wait Tuesday night to watch Skinwalker Ranch. I don't wait till Thursday night to watch Alone every week. So sports streaming is also projected to reach 118 million U.S. viewers monthly in 2025. And that's a shift from cable scheduled broadcasts on sports and as it shifts over to streaming. Why? The money's there. Amazon, Thursday Night Football. Peacock, they get a couple games, a Christmas game now. So it's happening. The shift is happening. Here's the problem. And I'm going to talk about this a little bit later, too. What happens is people are going to sign up for service and unsubscribe. Now, they're going to probably try to lock people in, but how do you tell that to a credit card company when they're going to cancel this? The credit card company is not going to sign align with the streaming service because then that credit card company is going to lose that person who has that credit card. They're just going to go to a different credit card company. You know why I know this? It's human nature. It happened with a big telenetworks, you know, Verizon, AT&T, and getting subscribers to their cellular services. The people were hopping off and on. So millennials and Gen Z, they favor streaming for personalization and mobile compatibility. 85% of Gen Z users use mobile devices. Man, I got to imagine. You know what you should put stock in is optical services, man, because watching these little things, the eye strain, woo, glasses are going. You're going to see every American by the age of 30, they're going to all be wearing glasses. So millennials and Gen Z do favor streaming. High-speed internet, smart devices, 4K, 8K streaming they're talking about, and IoT integration enhances accessibility. Not for me. I live in the rural area. So that's one of the bigger truths that's also a big lie. You know, only urban areas are seeing 4K, 8K consistently. By urban areas, I don't mean just the cities, but the suburbs surrounding them. Us people in the rural area in the country, we're struggling, which is ironic because as they suburbanize my area, I'm in the country, but like a couple miles up the road or a mile up the road, they just built a suburb development. And they all have high speed there. But they won't bring it to my house individually, the other houses. In fact, the AT&T tech once told me the only time that ever changes, Mr. Del Pilar, is when there's a big wig that was going to move near you. Then he'll pull some strings and demand it. And I go, really? He goes, you don't realize the power of some of these big wigs and making life difficult for the locals in terms of doesn't matter what they do nationally, life can be made difficult for companies in these areas by people with power. They're called the border supervisors. Anyway. You have fast again, free platforms like YouTube, 120% growth since 2021. And the free ad supported streaming television channels attract budget conscious viewers. I don't mind commercials. You know why? Because I get them on Netflix. I get them on Amazon. To me, it's just not worth it. the upgrade. You know, because I have so many I subscribe to, and they want upgrade here, upgrade there. Next thing you know, I am close to paying. I am paying about what I paid for cable and network. I'm paying because I have Hulu, which is about $100 a month, the platform I have. I've got Peacock, Paramount, Apple, Netflix, Amazon. So my price is right about what I pay for cable, you know. But I do watch some of the free platforms. And eventually I will cut the strings because I'm so close every month. My wife says, we're going to keep it this month. But I can't tell you the last time I watched Apple. That's probably going to be the first to go. So content and programming. So the thing about streaming that they see, I disagree here. I just think this is what they say, and they may do it, but they're going to change. Streaming platforms invest in exclusive originals. That's new. That's a few years ago, that was not the case, but it's become because they had to compete with network. Outside of that, they had to license all old material. Netflix led the way with that. Then Amazon followed, and the rest are co-streaming. Network is co-streaming their stuff on Paramount, Peacock, and Hulu with ABC. So so they do original programming. Netflix has Stranger Things. They have other documentaries. Amazon has Amazon's really dying, but Fallout's a good one. But they really shot the pooch, or pooch, whatever that saying is, with Rings of Power, close to $60 million per episode. It's been a colossal tank job. Wheels of Time, colossal tank job, another expensive one, and I'm going to talk about why in a bit. But you know, so they've invested in exclusive originals and serialized storytelling, and they encourage binge watching. Sports events, NFL on Netflix, Olympics on Peacock, Amazon's $1 billion NFL deal. So the shift to streaming is happening, and it's boosting viewership. Again, it's going to be temporary viewership. You'll get an NFL fan that will subscribe to Amazon for those 6 months and then dump it for 4 months and do it again, you know. But there's been an 86% increase during the March Madness time frame. So sports is a big driver. There's global expansion, requires diverse localized content, which is further driving streaming's appeal. I get shows from India that I watch. Netflix is developing shows in India, in Spain. So these streaming services, they know what they're doing. Netflix and Amazon do use weekly or hybrid release models. I had to really dig deep because nobody was talking about that. I go, yeah, they'll drop two or three shows. Then you have to wait every week for the new show to come on. So those release models are for some shows, and it's moving away from the full season binge drops. Because what happens is a hype. Boom, they drop all 10 episodes, and 2 weeks, the hype's gone. And I think they learned this from Yellowstone. Yellowstone was probably the last culturally epic show that came on. Before that, it was Games of Thrones, and they kind of intersected about the same time. But Yellowstone was its own worst enemy with all the drama from the cast and studio to when it came back for its final season, it had lost that pop cultural appeal. Nobody was talking about it at the water cooler. It was doing well for the subscribers who watched it, but it wasn't no longer the cultural relevance it once had. Games of Thrones had it from beginning to end. You know, but the point is they do these hybrid forms, these hybrid formulas, because it keeps the show in the news, and it's an ability to grow the viewer base. Why? They can jump in and watch it from beginning and catch up, and they grow the show. So it's brilliant, brilliant. Should have been done from the get-go. I don't like it. I like to binge it all at once, but it's brilliant from a marketing perspective. So what do I mean? Amazon releases 2 to 3 episodes initially, then drops the rest weekly. The Rings of Power. Netflix tests split seasons. Stranger Things. The Ranch. Or they do some weekly drops depending on the type of show. And as I said, weekly releases do sustain engagement, boost buzz, reduce churn, and align with competitors like Disney Plus and HBO Max. So what are some of the economic and industry dynamics? Well, streaming subscriptions are from $8 to $15 per service, and they keep jacking up. Hulu and Google or YouTube are two of the worst offenders, but they all do it. Peacock keeps shifting up a dollar every few months. You know, now, they want to tell you, well, we're still cheaper than paying $100 plus a month, but they're lying. Because, again, Paramount, Netflix, Peacock, Amazon, Disney Plus, Hulu, I'm up there already at the cable price. So no single streaming service matches the full content range of cable plus the free broadcast networks. services like Hulu, Peacock, and Paramount Plus, they're focusing on niche catalogs. Hulu is probably the closest to a cable-style channel because you can get all the various networks that have deals there. It's kind of like a platform. It's kind of like a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox platform where people build the shows for that platform. All the streaming services eventually wind up at that platform, and more so than at Netflix. So when you combine all these services, again, you're going to be paying a cable price. So don't let them lie to you with that. You know, if you do just a cheap services, Peacock, Paramount, all that, you're still looking about 40 to 50 bucks in 2025. But then you can do the Hulu one that I have, which is a lot of where I get dozens of networks on there. I'm looking at about $70 a month right now. Oh, $99 a month. I started at about 65. I think it's close to 100, if not at 100 now. They're greedy-ass people at Disney. And why is this happening? Because we crave certain shows, and Paramount may have one or two shows. Peacock may have one or two shows. I got Peacock for the NFL and just never bothered to unsubscribe. That's the other thing they catch you on. Too lazy to unsubscribe. Yeah. Paramount Plus, I subscribe to that because of Frasier, the sequel series, which was a massive disappointment. You know, so if those two will go. Apple, I sat there. We got it free for a year, and then I never unsubscribed, and I caught Ted Lasso. So those three are gone in the next few months. There's a couple of series I'm binging, but that's what's going to happen. As people start looking, man, I'm paying all this, got to cut back on some of these. They're going to like the ones they watch the least. And for as much a plot as it gets for certain shows, Apple's pretty sparse. They don't have much there. You know, connected TV advertising projected to reach 41 billion by 2027. It's at 21. It was at 21 billion in 2022. So it's going to double in just the next in what, 5 years. That's taking money from linear TV. So right now, though, media companies are prioritizing streaming platforms to complement linear TV, while niche services, and what's a niche service? Crunchyroll. Japan has one where they show all their Japanese shows. Crunchyroll has one where they show all anime. There's British ones, which just show British shows. So there's your niche ones. There's Shout Factory, which does a lot of horror. So they all have their niche, and you can pay for it. A&E Plus, it's A&E unto itself, you know. So antitrust scrutiny may limit some of these mergers. Right now, Paramount Plus Peacock, Paramount's trying to merge with Skydance, you know. But that's going to happen eventually, I think. But right now, they shouldn't. They should allow the competition to see how it plays out. So what are some of the network streaming strategies in the future of linear TV? Well, ABC streams on Hulu. Next day shows like Grey's Anatomy. Disney Plus has select content, and Disney's consolidating that. You're seeing a lot of Disney crap on Hulu now, which is fine. I started watching The Black Hole. I don't go to Disney Plus. I have Disney Plus. I have my login. For a long time, I didn't have a login. I was too lazy to figure it out. And then I got it set up. And why? To watch Deadpool and Wolverine. That was it. I tried watching their woke stuff. Heck, I even tried Tim Allen's series of Santa Claus, and that was kind of boring and dry. You know, so I'm like, I don't need that stuff. But they force it on me. I don't have the choice but to have it in their platform I got. So what is Disney doing? Because we're not watching over there. They're bringing it over on the Hulu, trying to get people, hey, I like this. Well, you go to Disney Plus, and you can get the whole library. But they are consolidating to avoid internal competition. NBC, Comcast owned, it uses Peacock for NBC shows, Saturday Night Live, live sports, and originals like Bel Air. They come at some of the, kill the remakes, Hollywood. They suck. They don't have the impact that they used to. It's terrible. And you're lazy. CBS, Paramount Global, offers content on Paramount Plus for shows like NCIS. They also have live NFL, and they have original. It's Star Trek up the yin-yang up there, and it's bad Star Trek, some of it. Yeah, I mean, please, Stacey Abrams representing the galaxy's diversity element. I'm sure, you know, get the hell out of here. You know, do I want to see a Picard that's 20 billion years old? No, I don't care. And some of these are popular, but they've canceled some too because it's an oversaturation of Star Trek. But it's their best thing they have going over there, so they just keep creating more Star Trek shows. I expect the BLM Star Trek 30.0 soon. I'm being sarcastic. I enjoy the original Star Trek and Star Trek New Generations. I did not like the Star Trek Generations movie because they killed off the old crew for Impact. There's a big, most people don't even view that as canon on a side note, Star Trek Universe, because it's terribly done. It was lazily done. It was a terrible movie. And, it was, they did it because, man, we got to grab something to bring him to the movie to watch this. And it backfired. Okay. So the reasons for no standalone services. Parent companies, Disney, Comcast, Paramount Global, they use unified platforms for economies of scale to reduce costs and avoid internal competition. So standalone services are risky because you're competing with Netflix, YouTube, and Amazon, and they own the market. You know, that's why, believe it or not, Tubi is owned by Fox. And a lot of these smaller ones, well, you know, hey, I mean, they're like a small business. They get 1 million people like, oh, you know. Networks complement linear TV is the bottom line here, with streaming to retain older viewers, local news, live events, and capture younger streaming native audiences. So streaming is the future. And that's what I mean by the reasons for no standalone services. Disney's combining everything with Hulu, Disney Plus with the Hulu side. So you will see some standalone services. But eventually, if they do succeed, they'll be gobbled up by a big corporation who just sees, wow, they got 1 million viewers. Let's give them 10 million. And well, those 1 million viewers will now become part of Comcast or Hulu or Disney Plus, you know? So that's what will happen there. So what are the effectiveness of streaming strategies? Well, Hulu has 48 million subscribers as of 2023. And that's driven by ABC and Fox content and ad-supported tiers. Though it does lack some sports channels. But because you have the three main networks that still do Hulu, you're going to get it anyway. I've never not seen a show, a sports event I wanted to see on through Hulu, except for Thursday Night Football. And when they're on Peacock, when they are on exclusive channels, you won't get it there. But they're exclusive on other streaming networks. So what I'm referring to is the networks when they show it on their shows, you'll get it on Hulu as well. Now, what I found shocking was Peacock has 31 million subscribers and Hulu has 48. I figured there would have been 10, 15 for Peacock, and I figured Hulu for about 70, 80. I was wrong. That's what research does. But Peacock's boosted by sports and NBC Originals. That's how they got me. That's how they probably got most of their 31 million. But they have limited 4K content and limited content in essence. Paramount Plus, CBS content, live sports through, though it's trailing massively Netflix and Hulu. I wasn't able to find numbers on that in terms of subscribers. Broadcast titles, those are shows that originally aired on traditional TV networks like ABC, NBC, and CBS. Grey's Anatomy, Saturday Night Live, NCIS. They do drive streaming demand. People don't want to watch it at the time it's slated, and we no longer really TV or have recordings. We just have it on streaming. So we'll head on over to Hulu, in my case, for both day, night, for both night of at times and the next day. But there's also Peacock and Paramount Plus and the others, you know. So, but there's also something called subscriber churn, which is what I talked about earlier. 39% cancel due to cost. And there's also a percentage that cancel because they just want to watch the NFL games. They're going to cancel. They'll pay for that 1 month. Okay, you're going to get my $6 here, eight, $9, $10. I'm going to watch this weekend of Christmas football. Then I'm canceling. Go screw you. So what's the future of traditional networks? Well, broadcast retains relevance. 15 of the top 100 most in-demand series globally are on broadcast television, local news, culture staple for older viewers. Now, the median age, though, for network television is 63 for CBS, 58. I'm sorry, 63 for CBS, 59 for ABC, and 59 for NBC. That's average age. So it's dying. Damn, I fall under those. Viewership is down 21% since 2021. Content, again, is migrating to streaming. Soap operas, Days of Our Lives, at Peacock. I'm repeating myself here. Let me scroll down. So what are the implications for Hollywood, the consumer costs, and content production? So streaming competition supposedly drives up production costs via talent, IP, bidding wars, which is a lie in some cases. It's true in the sense there's bidding wars for certain IPs, which is beyond me why Netflix would pay $400 million for certain IPs and then they bomb or tank. It's too big a risk and they know it. So right now they have money to spend. Money to blow. Excuse me. Ooh, got the sniffles. You got the AC going. And right there to dust. My apologies. But so that's happening right now. But then they're also paying yesterday's movie stars who are still popular, like Adam Sandler. He got a $250 million contract to do 5 or 6 movies or deals like that. But fragmentation and abundant viewing options are eroding traditional star power. So you've got this generation, because we are still in the early days of streaming, that are able to get these deals. But they're going away because they're going to die one day. And we're so fragmented, true star power is something of the past. You know, the Game of Thrones, people do not watch Game of Thrones because of the stars. They watch it because they love the series itself and it created stars, but the stars don't have enough power to go, man, that guy's on this show, so there's going to be 30 million who watch it. No, that guy's on that show, but there's going to be 30 people who watch it. And of course, I'm being facetious here, but you get my point. So star power is a dying breed, and it's the quality of the show. So within the generation, box office stars like Sandler may fade as fragmented platforms, Netflix, Hulu, YouTube, look for other ways to get people to subscribe. And they're also diluting their audiences' focus. 302 million Netflix subscribers alone in 2025. Do they really need to pay Adam Sandler $250 million? They probably have the money, but they don't need to. But they are right now because they got cash to burn. But eventually somebody smart's going to go, we don't need to do that. Look, man, he got a billion minutes here. But this series here that cost us a fraction of what we paid him got us 400 million or a billion. Minutes. And that's what's going to happen. So quality of the show will become more important. Then again, you have the niche platforms, Crunchyroll, which does anime. They're taking people. Audiences do prioritize story production and ensemble cast more than they do a star. But if Tom Cruise is a movie, I'll check it out. But those people are dying again. But Game of Thrones, they watch him for Game of Thrones. Only 15% of viewers cite lead actors as a primary draw. Think about that. So Adam Sandler's pretty lucky. And with actors and actresses becoming political, once again, star power is fading. What it's also doing is creating a cost issue. Stars of today aren't being paid like stars of yesterday. And I'm good with that. Now, there's 10 zillion more shows for them to be in. So a lot of them will be literally working year round forever, earning, they'll be in the top 10%, 1% for a lot of them, 10%, but they're not going to be the 200, 300, 400 million bank accounts after say 10, 15, 20 years worth of work. They'll have 15, 20 million, you know, so that will happen. And why this is happening? Well, fragmentation across 200 plus streaming services and declining theatrical revenue, down 40% since 2019. Box office mojo. And that shifts focus to IP-driven content. And that makes story-driven series rarer and actor costs lower, except for top-tier talent. And that top-tier talent is becoming less and less. Now, the downside is for Hollywood is you may see a media merger of Disney, Hulu, Paramount, Skydance. You may see like a big five studio system that concentrates control and potentially stifles creativity. That's a concern. So what are the consumer costs to repeat multiple subscriptions? 52% of viewers do find costs too high. So streaming services are at a point. They've got to watch it. They're finding their price point is not what they want it to be. It's much lower than what they thought it was. Why? Well, I don't care for Disney Plus. I don't care for woke crap agenda. I don't want to see a bigot, a racist like Rachel Zegler, who is a racist in my eyes. Bundles is what the key is. Disney Plus, Hulu, ESPN Plus. That's what's forced on me. I'm close to $100 now. There's been nights where I've gone, man, I should just whack Hulu. But I love Hulu. But eventually I'm just going to whack it because I'm finding myself watching and listening to podcasts more and more and more and news more and more. And I can always have Roku and Tubi. And I focus on maybe one or two. Amazon, which I get free because I'm an Amazon Prime member, and maybe Netflix. So these people have to, these companies have to watch their price points. So what are some of the issues I have and a lot of people have? Well, streaming favors 8 to 13 episode seasons. They're doing away with the 20 plus episode model. shorter seasons suit serialized storytelling. You get the one basic story. The problem is they take forever to get to the next season and you lose interest. So they are still learning how to combat lack of show fatigue, I guess. It's like you forget about a series. There's been plenty of series I've started. There was a Ichabod Crane series on Fox. It took like a year and a half, 2 years, and I lost interest in the show. And that's what happens with a lot of these. There's a great Indian show I lost interest in. It took 2 years for the new ones. So they've got 10 shows, and 2 years later, another 10? No. No. So 58% of viewers prefer longer seasons of 15 to 20-plus episodes. So they're going to have to come to terms with that. And how will they come to terms with that? Well, part of the problem is they pay too much for an episode to make it. 10 to 20 million per episode for high-end shows. And when you're doing woke crap like Amazon does, they've had massive losses on some of these shows. Rings of Power, Wheel of Time. There's been other shows. And you know, it's sad but true. These pride shows, a lot of these black shows, a lot of these Latino shows, and I'm Latino. People are doing that. I don't want to watch that shit. That's how they think. I just want to watch a good show. Make it a diverse cast. I don't care. But don't be shoving your messages. So then they'll put a lot of money into this to send a woke message out, and it fails. I mean, let's be honest. You get an all-white show that's going to talk about white messaging, it's going to fail too. We just want to be entertained. And Hollywood seems to have forgotten that. So they're going to have to come to terms with the cost, the messaging, and understanding what their viewers want. And we're going to talk about that with Karate Kid Legends. You know, but higher budget shows, 10 to 20 million per episode. The Rings of Power was 58 million. And it's been nothing but a complete waste of time and money. And I think Amazon's just committed like a suicide wannabe who keeps slashing the wrist. That's what Amazon is with this Rings of Power. Poor writing, deviation from source material like Wheels of Time and Rings of Power. Even though Rings of Power is original, it's completely deviated from J.R.R. Tolkien's Middle Earth world, universe that he built. And this is driving subscriber churn. Somebody may have subscribed to Amazon to watch Rings of Power. Screw this. And they leave. Again, do not drive a message, which is what Netflix, all of them. Platforms also produce fewer films than traditional studios. And then it's a hit or miss on whether they're any good. So this Wild Wild West is truly Wild Wild West. You know, CBS's NCIS is hugely popular, not only on network, but on the streaming servers, because they have longer seasons, 20-plus episodes. Now, some people say, hey, they have a streaming cultural footprint. Nobody's talking about them at the water cooler. And my take is, really? Anybody talking about Wheels of Time at the water cooler? Rings of Power at the water cooler? They talked about Yellowstone at the water cooler for 4 years before the drama screwed it up and they stopped talking about it. You know, so these type of cultural footprints, that's magic. That's what all these shows want. They're paying Tyler Sheridan a buku amount of money, and none of his shows are really bringing in new viewers. They're keeping the viewers they already have at Paramount Plus happy. Man, great show, love it. But they're not making a cultural impact. They don't have a cultural footprint. Because it's hard to do that. So let's close this out. Streaming's rise is fueled by convenience, cost, content, and technology. It is reshaping media, my friends. ABC, NBC, CBS, they're all adapting through Hulu, Peacock, and Paramount Plus. And they're doing it that way instead of having a standalone service, which is more than likely to fail, because what they're doing right now is struggling. So linear TV is going to persist with local and cultural relevance, but Hollywood faces higher costs, shorter seasons, and consolidation. Now, the higher cost is brought on by themselves. That's their fault. They control that. And then you have viewers navigating rising fees, and that's going to create pushback. Advertising shifts, global expansion, and regulatory factors will further define what it has become and is becoming and is a transformative era. So we will eventually see the balancing of streaming's dominance with broadcast's enduring niche, because it's not going away. Let us move on. Karate Kid Legends, Hollywood misses the mark on fan desires. So, Karate Kid Legends and Hollywood's missteps is what I call this. Karate Kid Legends was released at the end of May 30th. It stars Ralph Macchio, Jackie Chan, and Ben Wang. Okay, we all know who Jackie Chan is, the biggest worldwide star. And Ralph Macchio, we know him because of Karate Kid Legends. And then nobody knows who Ben Wang is. It earned $49 million domestically. But it's falling well short of the Cobra Kai hype and the franchise legacy. This highlights what I call Hollywood's greed-driven failure to grasp the audience's desires. Case in point, they thought we throw Jackie Chan, we get Ralph Macchio, we get the reboot guy who in 2010 we rebooted it, had a box office hit, and we bring back the guy from the four original movies. But here's what happened since that time. The fans favor Johnny Lawrence over what they see as a very shallow Macchio Chan reunion. Jackie Chan had no personality in the first movie. It was a Jackie Chan vehicle that sold. But Ralph Macchio, look, he's successful in the Cobra Kai series. He was a cookie cutter hero back in the 80s during a certain generation. But one thing Americans have always liked is the coming from nothing or overcoming what you screwed up. And that's Johnny Lawrence. Mr. Zabaska, I think is how you pronounce it. So to me, this reflected in out-of-touch Hollywood making assumptions about what its base wanted, which was nothing but a profit greed mentality. Hey, let's throw these two stars. So where's my fan frustration with this? Well, it's not a fan frustration as much as I'm an analyst and looking at this. It opened again with $20 million. It lagged behind the 2010 reboot of $56 million. And that's because Jackie Chan was a global star versus Legends niche focus. Jackie Chan's just not the star he was. He's old. He was a much bigger star back in 2010. That was, oh my God, 15 years ago. And his career was already on the downward trend at that point. So it's at about $49 million domestically, $95 million total. That's not good. But the cool thing is it was set at a budget of $50 million with about $25 to $30 million via marketing. So that's about $75 to $80 million. And it's already losing steam. But wait a minute, or $95 million. Well, you guys have to remember, everybody gets their cut of that ticket. So there's a three times rule in Hollywood. So using the three times, so what you take is the cost of that movie, and you have a factor of about three times for them to break even. So this movie has made about $100 million, rounded up $100 million. It needs about $225 to $240 million worldwide to break even, per that three times Hollywood rule. Now, I would imagine, I said $25, $30 million marketing, maybe it didn't cost, let's say $15 million. It's still going to need another $100 million to break even. And it can come close through the years, though, syndication, deals here or there. It will eventually break even because of the price tag to make it. But it's still not doing well. Drop 30% midweek. This weekend, it's projected to make $1 million here domestically. So that's a terrible box office decline in the sense of what they were hoping. They were hoping to get Magic in a Bottle. Me, my first take is Johnny Lawrence going to be in it? And when I saw nothing, I'm like, he's not going to be in it. I said, I bet you they'll do a cameo and that'll be about it. So it's likely to peak out at about $150 million worldwide if it's lucky. It's got to hold steady. So a $200 million cap is possible with strong international pushes, late surge, but they're more than likely going to have to make up with that with various streaming services over the years. So, for example, whoever studio made it, if it was Warner Brothers that made it, it'll wind up probably at Paramount Plus. I'm sorry, on Max. If it was Paramount, on Paramount Plus, et cetera, et cetera. And then eventually it'll wind up on Netflix and Amazon. So, for example, MGM made The Accountant 2. It's already on Amazon because Amazon owns MGM. So why did the show fail? Well, critics give it a 58% on Rotten Tomatoes and IGN calling it formulaic, saying it lacked originality, didn't have great broad appeal. The fans loved it, though, at 92%. They were drawn to some of the nostalgia. Some Cobra Kai fans went. And some study says there's a 10% increase when it's multicultural. maybe so. I think that's negligible. But the problem is Cobra Kai. Cobra Kai, it had 600 million hours globally from mid-2025. from Netflix's 2022's $300 million for seasons 1 through 4, then $100 and $150 million per season since. Six-season show. Massive fan engagement. 70% of the fans prefer Johnny Lawrence over Daniel LaRusso. That was in my fan pool survey. And it's driven by Johnny's redemption arc in Cobra Kai. And why? Because Daniel pretty much had a static role. He'd already was king of the hill, success. He was just living large, living your domestic life. It was Johnny Lawrence's story that captivated everybody. So Karate Kid's Legends are focused on Lee Fong's story with Mr. Han, which is Jackie Chan and Macho, and it completely ignored the Cobra Kai lore. No integration, no fan favorite narrative. So they completely ignored the complete reason the show blew up and became popular. When they did their money grab, let's do Karate Kid Legends. Well, what about the show? Screw the show. We don't need the show. Johnny Zabka's cameo. That's a hollow gesture. Featured a brief under a minute pizza scene with Daniel and Johnny. And it tended to be a nod to Cobra Kai and their friendship, but it was tacked on. It was intended as a studio pacifier backed by Macho's franchise unity claim. It tried to appease the fans without appeasing the fans. Fans say no Johnny, no go. 70% favoring Zabka again. Hollywood missed the boat. They missed a chance for a bigger role to lift the $49 million opening weekend haul. They could have brought in the old nostalgic fans, the Jackie Chan fans, and the Cobra Kai fans, and they chose not to. To me, it would have been great to have had Jackie Chan, who's too old, and Ralph Macchio, and then had Johnny Lawrence doing the actual training. Having him all work. And combine to teach this kid about life, about overcoming. Maybe give him a situation where he's the a-hole, fails, and Johnny Lawrence is there to help others. Hey, son, learn from me. You know, Jackie Chan falling from a tree. Don't fall from a tree. I'm kidding. Jackie Chan had a terrible accident doing his stuff, though, from a tree. Woo! Man is a rock, though. And Ralph Macchio, how to stand on one leg. Woo! But the whole point here is Hollywood just doesn't understand what fans want. And it's not just in this where they missed the mark. Nothing to do with wokeness. Nothing to do with thinking this or that as much as they completely miss the part of why Karate Kid was booming again. Because it wasn't Karate Kid. It was Cobra Kai. They took the name of the dojo or the school and made it culturally relevant. They had a cultural footprint. Cobra Kai did. Not Karate Kid. But Hollywood keeps doing it with woke examples. Ghostbusters. With the all-female flop. Then there's bloated movies costing way too much. They'll never make their money back. Indiana Jones. His last one was like $250 million. No Time to Die was another one, $250 million. Over-relying on CGI. And the audience, we just want to be entertained with stuff that we want to believe. We want to fantasize. We want to be that person on screen. No, we don't want to be that train wreck on screen and then blame white America. 65% of audience favor practical effects over CGI, and they favor story over spectacle. So we're okay with the superhero movies, but we also want other movies too. Karate Kid Legends was not able to deliver on that. Now, cameos... I'm not knocking the cameo, but this movie, the cameo was there, the appease. Or maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was planned along, but they just completely mismosed our story. But cameos can be great. Stan Lee with the Marvel Comics universe. Hugh Jackman in movies with Deadpool. Or actually, the crossover itself. The Fall Guy. Now, that did not do as well as they wanted. But they had the Fall Guy Lee Majors. At the end, he just passed away, I believe. I'm not sure, though. Many people felt it was a tacked-on cameo. What if a stronger Zabka role could have engaged 70% of the Zabka fans to easily pushing the movie another 10, 15, 25 million on opening weekend? Could have had better word of mouth, tapping into that Cobra Kai fan base. Uniting Johnny, Daniel, and Lee under the two branches, one tree. What about that for a concept? Bridging franchise generations. See? I'm just an average Joe here. And even I see, actually, I am, some people have called me a marketing genius when I was at my previous company. But you need money. You do need money. So, 5 million? It's not going to make its money back if you use the 3-time rule, or it's going to take years to make back. Why? Because of the lost opportunity to align with fan priorities. And this just reveals Hollywood's greed-driven disconnect. Their wokeness. Their want, driving the message. I'm not saying Karate Kid Legends was any of that. I'm just, what I'm talking about is all these aspects. They just look at what the fan wants. How hard is that? Instead, they want to dictate to the fan, as they did here. I was hoping this movie would do good, but when it didn't have Johnny Lawrence, I was like, I don't care. And that's how, obviously, I am in the majority in that. All right, let's move on. Go woke, go broke. So the gaming industry is a battleground for cultural and political debates, often amplified by social media, public figures that create a volatile environment for the developers, with the developers themselves at times creating that volatile empire or environment. So on June 6th, Ian Pruix, CEO of 1047 Games, he sparked controversy. It was at a Summer Game Fest. He wore a MAGA style hat for Splitgate 2, which is a game, for the unveiling, and it was intended as a nod to the game's "Make First Person Shooters Great Again" slogan. Now, Splitgate 2 is a free-to-play first-person shooter sequel by 1047. It uses portal mechanics. If you're a kid, you're a gamer, you get this. If you're not, if you're like my age, I'm a gamer. I don't game much, but I'm still a gamer. But if you don't game, you're like, but Splitgate 2 uses portal mechanics for strategic movement and combat. And it was launched with advanced gunplay, momentum-based movement, and a battle royal mode with unique worlds. And its goal was to redefine the genre with skill-based gameplay. And they were planned on regular updates, which was going to be available on Steam and Xbox. And they had a 61% positive review from only 15,000 viewers, though. But that's actually not bad. So outrage erupted on social media when users saw the hat. And they said, that's a political statement. No, he was just using that marketing scheme to make his statement. And it worked. But the minority got to him. And no, I'm not talking about black, brown, yellow, red minority. I'm talking about the minority as in numbers of race baiters. The true face of racism, my friends, as we all know, is a soft bigotry of low expectations. All these white people who want to sit there and think they're so much smarter than us and have to save us. And you have just a lot of black and brown and red and yellow racists. And I'm technically brown by America standards. My grandma was called the N-word. My cousins, your sisters are brown. I got the Spaniard skin. But what has happened is people say, oh, only whites can be racist. So that just opens the door for racism from these other cultures. And they say, and the bigots out there really throw it out there. Jasmine Crockett is one who has said, we Latinos are no good except the clean toilets. Ozzy Osbourne's daughter said it. Who's going to clean my toilet? I just saw a video I did a short on. Go to Grumlings Media, our platform, and you'll see it there. The low expectations, the soft bigotry of low expectations. Or this white woman. You know, you don't have the maid coming to do your dishes. You don't have the gardener. Well, you're going to do those yourself. These people are important. Only for that. They empower us by giving us a toilet scrub, a hoe, or a frying pan. Yes, I'm taking care of you. I'm going to make sure they pay you $30 an hour. So you never leave that job. I don't want you to get an education. Then you might think for yourself. I can't have that. Jasmine Crockett, AOC, Nancy Pelosi. It's all bigotry across the board, racism across the board from the Democrat Party. We conservatives, we want to teach you how to fish so you can learn how to fish on your own and be a productive citizen. So you don't need my help. And you have pride and take care of yourself and make decisions on yourself. How to raise your kid. What God you want to pray to. Not the government that they want to call God. Anyway, back to this guy, Pruix. Wow. there's a wild dog on the side of my house. I live in a rural country. It could be a neighbor's dog. Anyway, Pruex. Yeah, Pruex. Again, there goes to redefine the genre. Outrage erupted on social media. And then this Pruitt guy was an idiot. I'm so sorry. Forgive me. Forgive me. Wrong move, brah. Because those people complaining aren't buying your game or playing your game. They just hate the hate. And what did he do? He pandered. So not only did he have them, the left complaining and trying to attack him, he turned off the right who said, screw your game. So there was less gain support. And what that eventually culminated in, I don't know if it was because of this, but they had to let go of some people just this week. Now, how did this start? Black Girl Gamers, a racist group playing the role of a diversity consulting group. Now, Western gaming has died. Eastern gaming is thriving because they do gaming and they give the fans what they want. Are you listening, Hollywood? Well, Western gaming have created ugly women. Nothing but gay and lesbian characters, white supremacy, all bad. Well, the average gamer is a white kid, a white boy. I'm not going to buy your crap. And they're gravitating to Black Myth Wukong. Independent games. Indie games, as they call them. They don't play this nonsense. And these AAA games have tanked. But Black Girl Gamers criticize it as MAGA. Let me tell you something, Black Girl Gamers. Nothing but hoes. Hoes for the leftist Democrat plantation. I'm sorry, you are. You make America great again? Well, that's what Trump did. He did more for blacks, for historically black colleges, for the communities with programs, for those imprisoned needlessly, like for weed, things like that. He did more for blacks than Obama or Biden ever did. Working wages amongst all minorities, amongst all Americans, were up. And they're getting up again with Trump in office. But he's the guy who's racist? You need to look in the mirror at yourself. So, what did that do that caused a backlash? Conservatives said, no, senor. You want to criticize me? Let me introduce you to my little friend. We call him Boycott. And the trend, that's the industry trend right now, is showing a 15% drop in player engagement from political controversies. See, before it worked when the woke did it. But now the woke don't buy games like the conservatives do. We buy games more than leftists. We're more honest, too. A leftist is more apt to download an illegal crack version than a conservative. True story. So where did it start? It was at Summer Game Fest. Ray told you he wore the hat, and they started screaming at him. Now, 68% of gamers perceive political symbolism in media that fuels the cancel culture. No data links the hat directly to Splitgate 2 sales or community drop-off and support. But on Steam, that's where you get real time. It's happening there. So there's no data right now. And I'm not saying the layoffs are because of that, but he's lost a lot of support. And Batgirl Gamers involvement, that's what these groups do. They tried to do that with the Chinese developers Black Myth Wukong. The word on the street is, I forget what the group is called, but they went there for $6 million. We'll make sure your game is diversity driven. They said, go bleep off. 20 million units sold in 1 month, obliterating any AAA game. And it costs about 60% less than a AAA game. Why? They didn't bend the knee. Black Girl Gamers, all they did was hurt Splitgate. And that VJJ. All they did was hurt it. And companies are learning. They've ended contracts with these type of groups. So political controversies can cut player engagement again by 15%. And insincere apologies also do the same thing. Not only were we pissed when he insincerely apologized to appease them, we were pissed because he bent the knee. He was trying to have it both ways. When we're looking for fighters, hey, stand up to him and we'll buy your game and support it. And there is a growing polarization. There's a trend with conservative gamers more likely to abandon games and misalign with their values, which hurts Splitgate too. in a region of the backlash. Now, we define woke as an excessive progressive focus on social justice and identity politics, undermining traditional values in entertainment. You know what else we don't like is cultural appropriation. And it's not that we don't like it. We're tired. I'm tired of my fellow Latinos screaming cultural appropriation. Somebody wears a Mexican hat. And I'm not talking about actual Mexicans. I'm talking about the Americans, Americanized Latinos. You know, you go to a lot of Mexicans. Oh, man, it's pretty funny. Oh, yeah. I'll give you time to take a picture with me. Oh, that's how we are. We don't care. Because we're conservatives. We don't want that nonsense being made into an issue. It's a joke. I joke with my co-host G. Mangani, the G-Man, because he's Indian. And we'll say something. And I joke in a way to flatter him, because Indians have a strong culture of working hard, a lot of technical jobs and all that. Then there's the 7-Eleven jokes. So I kind of crack a joke on him about that. And then I'll turn right around and say, yeah, but damn it. You know you're pissing off all these white Democrats because y'all actually own the store. Because white Democrats only want you to work in the store. So why we poke fun at each other? I poke fun at I'm a Latino. I say, I love me some rice and beans, which I do in real life. I'm not willing to joke about it. And I joke about when some guy called me a beaner. Tell me to go back to Cuba. Tell me to learn English. All of it's wrong. I just looked at him, shook my head, and laughed. Go, you a pathetic excuse for a human being. And then they get the big and brave, like, kind of hold me back. You just interrupted me. And that foe, we're gonna fight. He's like, hold me back. There's nobody to hold him back, but he's not moving forward. People crack me up, talk a lot of trash on social media. Get him in person. Yes, Mr. That happened to me once. This guy trash talking, so I'm at an event. And I go, you're this guy. Yes, sir, Mr. Del Pilar, but I didn't mean it. I'm fucked with seven. Bunch of ducks with a C on social media. So, in 2024, Statista survey showed 45% of conservative gamers are conservative-leaning versus 30%. That's a 15% demographic shift in sales. That's in my opinion. So they lose out on 50%. That's a lot of sales when you're talking in the millions. Not to mention, now we have our own YouTube channels. We do our own gaming reviews. Gaming magazines are dying. Then nobody goes to them for gaming reviews. We'll go to a video on YouTube. So not only do we know how to boycott, we know how to teach people what to boycott. We learned this from progressives. We organize on X. We organize on X against Splitgate. What are some of the woke label games that have failed? Assassin's Creed Shadows, 20% sales drop. Star Wars Outlaws, 15% below projections. Dragon Age of Veilguard, 25% sales shortfall. These are initial sales. It takes even more. Final Fantasy VII, The Rebirth, 10% dip from the modern themes. Marvel's Avengers 2.0, 30% lag from diversity quotas. Cyberpunk 2077, Phantom, Liberty downloadable content, 15% below forecast because of woke perception. Call of Duty Black Ops 6, 12% shortfall from progressive elements. Horizon, Forbidden Wars, Burning Shores, 18% underperformance. Fable Reboot, 20% pre-order sales drop because of the gender fluidity stupidity. Immortals of Avium, 35% below expectations for woke narratives. Go woke, go broke, and I don't care. So we look at Splitgate 2's failure to stand up for themselves as going woke. They bent the knee with an apology. Black girl gamer said, "There, Mr. Pruitt, we need some talk." Mr. Pruitt said, "I'm sorry." This is unofficial, but a 22X poll by Gaming Pulse found 62% of conservative gamers blame woke decisions for the decline, though self-reported and unvalidated by peer review. Gaming forum trend suggests a gaming forum trend by Reset Era in suggested a 30% server player drop since apology, possibly from conservative boycott. 1047 has not released sales data, but I can tell you this, it's going to drop. When you have a 50% of your market is conservative that buys games, and that 30% that is liberal, they're not all buying games. Splitgate 2's fallout may push developers to prioritize audience alignment. He's going to learn from this. Maybe too late for his little studio, but going on to his next job, he'll learn. So the industry analysts predict a 10% shift in development budgets because of these feedback. Games are being delayed because you're trying to take the woke out of them. So Splitgate 2's episode warns how missteps, and this is just the latest misstep of a gaming company, amplified by bigoted and racist consultants professing DEI, can derail development, can derail your marketing, and can derail the sales of the game. The growing conservative influence and boycott trends will only heighten the pressure on all the developers. And you better listen, boys and girls. You are in a critical juncture, Western gaming is, in gaming's evolution, or you will be overtaken by Eastern companies. And that's not necessarily a good thing. Western gaming needs to thrive, but you better get on board. And with that, my friends, there you have it. The Red, White, and Rude with William Del Pilar, your conservative Latino. Before I go, make sure you bookmark grumblingsmedia.com where you can find this podcast. Fired up California. It's conservative political talk. My Points on the Board podcast, where sports and politics converge. As well as our libertarian podcast and our pure play sports, football, and basketball podcast. And you're probably listening to this on a platform. You can follow us on these platforms, YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. Thank you, my friends, for tuning in. Without your support, I will not survive. Make sure you like and share this podcast, and make sure you give it a thumbs up. Give it a thumbs up. That's it. Don't want to have to come after you with some of my boys. Well, they're no longer here. Trump's deported them all. Damn it. I'm kidding. This is William Del Pilar for the Red, White, and Rude. And until next week, stay safe, my friends. And I am out.